It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scotty Johnny himself. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
It's about the same old at this point. There's not been massive changes here. Somehow I still have a hole in my roof.
What?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Winter's coming.
Winter is coming. And I don't want to get sued for saying that. I think that that's just a common phrase you can use. But yeah, how are things down south by you?
it was almost summer-like weekend. The difference between here and Duluth, Minnesota is noticeable this time of year because they're getting snow as we speak.
Yes.
So.
All right.
Well, me and my daughter went for a 7:30 bike ride tonight with our flashlights. So that's something I would not be doing in Duluth. So.
No.
But I noticed we got the third window going on. Who's that?
We are very fortunate to be joined once again, friend of the podcast, Megan Schrader joins us this week. She says we're going to be talking Brewers to start mostly off. So how are you doing, Megan? How's everything going for you?
I'm good. I guess it's been, we're at midterms now here at Marquette. So we're still chugging along with in-person and online classes. So we'll see how long that lasts, but here I am. Thriving.
how do you feel you did on your midterms? I saw that you took one today, right?
Yeah, I took one today, and then I had one last week, and then I still have one more to go. So we'll see. We'll see how they go. The other two I've gotten A's on, and then this one that is upcoming this week, that's the one I'm most nervous about. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I'm just guessing you probably got an A. I don't know that much about you, but I'm just guessing.
That's my guess. I remember my very first finals that I had in when I was in the seminary. I only had three classes that actually had finals. One had like a paper or something like that and other things. But I had them all on the same day. So I had 2 in the morning. And then I had like a break. And I went outside to play football in St. Paul. And it had snowed, of course. We were playing football outside. And somebody punted the ball and it was coming up really short. So I run up and like, you know, any 19-year-old idiot, I'm like, I'm not going to drop this ball. I start kind of slipping. Ball goes through my hands. I'm like, no, I'm going to catch this. I'm awesome. And my foot slipped up underneath me, and I heard it crack in 2 different places. But I caught that ball and hobbled my way to my third final, which was fantastic. It was great. It was swole up like crazy.
You might find this one hard to believe, John. My first semester of college, I was put on probation and had a 0.05 BAC and
I was gonna say
GPA.
Yeah. No way to go through life, son.
I did have a 0.5 GPA after my first semester. That's right. Four Fs and an A comes out to a 0.5.
Well,
it's a great ratio.
I know. It's wonderful.
Call them the best in the business for nothing, folks. All right. The one thing we'll say before we kick everything off here is to remember wherever you are listening to us, and thank you again for listening to us this week, all of our friends in India and Australia and Austria and Germany and Ukraine and everywhere else. Please remember to go and subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us wherever it is that you have us. And you can follow us on Twitter. We exist on Twitter. You can find the show at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can find me at Not So Humble Host. Aaron is on the Twitter box right at this point somewhere. Where is that, Aaron?
That's at Cheddar Talk. It's become a place where me and Illinois people are fighting again. So not Megan per se, but the ones that cheer for the sea helmets. we've been fighting, and of course always the overly aggressive talking down of Wisconsin by people from Chicago who spend the majority of their time in Wisconsin, whatever possible.
Yeah, whenever they're not working, but they're driving north to enjoy a state they'd rather be in when they're trying to enjoy themselves.
They don't want to be here now because we're a COVID hotspot, and it's like, well, you probably brought it here. Anyways.
Anyhow. And Megan, I know you're on Twitter because I follow you and respond to you frequently. Where would people follow you on Twitter?
I'm at BrewCrewMegan. It's been my handle. I changed it a while ago, but now it's been that for a little bit. So still growing. Over 2,000 followers.
Not just great brewers talk, but great sports cards. Every now and then you're pulling in good sports card stuff. And it's Star Wars. Lots of Star Wars stuff, too. So good things there. Oh, so make sure you follow Megan.
Very first time we had Megan on, I think we told her friend Ober Jedi.
Yep.
Sorry, I follow him. To change it because it was too long. I've noticed that he did shrink it. He did shorten it up. So now it's just Ober Jedi. And it was I Ober appreciate Sports that he listened Jedi. To us. That was nice.
That's nice. We appreciate him, too. All wonderful places to follow. There's so many good places to follow for different sports. But we're going to kick everything off here in what we like to call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right. So we promised you this last week. This is the time because we are it kind of lined up oddly perfectly this year in that we have the Packers bye, pardon me. And we had the Brewers playing, their little playoff, which will never be a 16-team playoff again from what we just saw. Nobody wants to do that again. And the number of, teams with losing records who snuck in there is something a lot of people weren't happy with.
The only way I'll even recognize this Brewers playoff experience is when they say that they've made the playoffs X amount of times in X amount of years. I'll be like, okay, that's that. Otherwise, we will not speak of this playoff series because it was.
But it was better than the Cubs did. Right? The Cubs scored one run.
Better than the Twins did, too.
Sadly, yeah.
And the Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, the Cubs got one total run, and the Brewers got two. We were playing a better team. But yeah, the dream of the I-94 World Series, for Milwaukee and the Twins, it was alive for a hot minute and died a very quick death. So there was no pain. Basically,
I just
love
that the Twins were eliminated before the Brewers even saw the first pitch.
Right.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
Hurtful.
We're done.
Hurtful stuff. So the way we're going to go through this, though, is we want to talk about kind of how this year went. And the first thing I want to start off with is I still think that Stearns does a fairly good job of most personnel development, or at least identifying the people who he wants and getting them. And we enjoy Stearns, and we enjoy Drunk David Stearns, which is also a great Twitter follow. And I believe, don't quote me on this, but they might be different people.
No. Reality shattered, John. Don't say that.
No, I should have had you earmuffs.
Next thing you're going to tell me that is Clue Haywood's real name isn't Clue Haywood, and he's a lawyer from Arizona that just happens to frequent dive bars on a regular basis and maybe a raging alcoholic.
I don't want to go too far into this, Aaron. I don't want to hurt your heart.
Okay, everything on Twitter is real to me. You know that, right?
Fair. That's good. That's a really good place to live right now. I want to start, though, with this year's free agents, because we actually had quite a lot. And so here's the list on people we got here that came into the Brewers from last year. So, like, Brock Holt, Avisail Garcia, Logan Morrison, Eric Sogard coming back, Omar Narvaez, Ryan Healy, Jed Jerko. Okay, now I think that we're all going to agree Jed Jerko was the best. Megan, am I off base? You're not going to disagree with me on that?
I totally agree. I don't know how anyone could disagree with that. That's pretty much the safest call you could take from all that.
I try not to always make the safest call. You got to make something a little crazy, but I'm basically just doing this because I want to remove him essentially from our evaluation of this, because I think Jed Jerko was towards the top in OPS. He had good power numbers. He consistently hit in big spots. I mean, just in terms of everything he did, in just baseball stuff and in the old school baseball stuff and in the metric stuff, he measures well as anybody in the Brewers this year and played very well for the most part. It's all these other names that you're kind of look at. And I guess, Megan, first off, of those other ones I named, if you can recall them, if you need me to say them again, I will, but kind of who was the one that you were most kind of happy with how they did this year, and who's the one that you just were the most, I guess, disappointed in?
Well, I could start with who I was most disappointed in, because I feel like that's easier.
It was.
I mean, I feel like we're all underperforming, really, from what Stearns was hoping. I think the general consensus was Stearns was hoping for some of these guys to have a bounce back season, because they were all coming off of injury or just a terrible season last year or something like that. So I think in a long-term season, it would have worked, but what we were faced with, they didn't have enough time to mesh together, and it just kind of felt like a hodgepodge. So getting back to who I thought was the most disappointing, I had high expectations for Omar Narvaez coming in from Seattle, and he just crapped the bed, really. I mean, he was horrible. He was absolutely horrible, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat this at all, because there's no way to sugarcoat it. He was just terrible. Like, you could have put Eric Kratz out there, freaking 40-year-old man, and he would have done better than Omar Narvaez. He was horrible. So definitely he's my pick for most underperforming.
And Kratz is just a joy of a human being, too. So
he can pitch.
Yeah,
he can. Yeah. Oh, who's our pitch? Who's the guy who always used to pitch for us and he left this year? Help Paris. Me.
Yeah, Paris.
Yes. Yes. We need that. We're missing that position pitcher right now.
I'll tell you that the non-baseball reason I was most disappointed for Omar Narvaez is I'm a fan of The Wire, and I really wanted to have a whole bunch of memes of Omar coming. He was not coming. He did not show up, and I could almost never use that gif. So that made me very unhappy. But yeah. No, that's a good one too, I guess. I guess on mine, because he can't, I think, can't be upset with Sogard, because he kind of was what I expected him to be. I'm kind of torn. Like, Brock Holt is the guy who I think I might have been most hopeful for. Logan Morrison kind of in there and got the least for my hope. Just because Brock Holt is a guy who's been on, what'd we say? Like, Aaron and I were talking, he's a lot like a Craig Counsell. He's been in some big moments in World Series on a couple different teams and stuff. And it's like, he's a guy who could play a couple positions and could have helped spelling a lot of guys and being a very useful player here, there, and everywhere. And he finished the year on a completely different team. Right. So that one hurt, I think, more than Morrison, because Morrison just, he didn't have the power he could have had. I will always remember his just absolutely missing second base that cost us an entire game early in the season. Like, picking the ball and just flicking it like 30 feet away from Arcia at second base for a double play. And you're just like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. I don't know, Aaron, what do you think?
Well, and with Sogard too, I mean, you knew what was coming with Sogard. I mean, it's the Scooter Jeanette factor. Like, everyone really liked him because he's got a sweet thing about him, either a name or glasses or something like that. And he's an okay second baseman, and he shows up sometime in the clutch, you know, and he's the nerd. Everyone likes him. But I mean, did you have Smoke on that list?
That's the, I wrote down.
Okay.
I wrote down. Yeah, I didn't. I wrote down Morrison, and I was like, wasn't there another guy who was basically Morrison that we had? And I couldn't think of it, and I was going through the list. I didn't even see him on the stats page.
Holt left the team and went to another team. I think Smoke got cut and nobody picked him up. So yeah. I'd put that as most disappointing season. How say you, Megan, on that one?
Well, actually, Holt finished off the year, like, completely turned it around. He went to the Nationals for obviously a team that was struggling all year anyway. They were not really competitive, but he somehow figured it out in Washington. But with us, just he was bad too. I mean, call it like it is, they were just bad. They were just not good at baseball for, I mean, it's a small sample size, and that's like what we've been hearing all season, but they were not good.
Yeah, Smoke went from like starting to cut like in 24 hours. Like, he started a game and then was gone. And I mean, and I guess it's not just, I mean, Smoke is what he is. He's,
he batted 186 and had 5 home runs.
Right. He's a strikeout machine. That's a pretty decent fielding first baseman, who had a couple good years in Toronto, but I'm telling, and not to veer too far off topic, but man, I'm still, we brought this up. Did we bring this up last week or 2 weeks ago, John? Like I like everything. You know, I can at least like figure out everything David Stearns has done to this day, except for letting Jesus Aguilar go. Because what have we had since then? I mean,
yeah,
I still don't get it. I don't understand it. Like, he was having a bad start to the season, whatever. I mean, at least there was one full year of, I don't know. And it was like him and Thames were a two-headed monster. I get that. But I still don't understand that. Like, you could see, like, Jesus Aguilar had talent. You could see it, like, when he played. I mean, and it's been a black hole ever since then, you know?
And he was fun on the team, I think.
Well, yeah, and you could tell that was probably a big part of what was wrong with the end of last year and the beginning of the end, all of this year, is between him and Kane being gone. I mean, that was the heart and soul of the team, you know? So you take those two out of there. I mean, Yelich is a really good player, and he's a super nice guy, but he reminds me a little bit of the catcher up in Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember who you're talking about. There was Morneau was there, and then, oh, I can't even think. He went to Creighton Durham Hall High School. He's a local kid from there, which is where my cousins went and such. So I'm trying to think of his name. I can see his Maurer.
Maurer, thank you. He's kind of like Maurer in the fact that he's just quiet, you know? Like, and that was always kind of Maurer's deal up in Minnesota, too, was, you know, like, they're always like, we need him to be more of a team leader, you know? And I'm not, this isn't me going after Yelich at all, but it's just, it doesn't seem like it's kind of his personality. Like, he goes along with the groove and everything else like that, but he is, you know, you need those heart and soul players. That's the reason why they brought Torrey Hunter back to the Twins while Maurer was still playing, was because they needed that heart and soul. And I think Jesus was a big part of it, Thames was a big part of it, and Kane was a big part of it. And they all left, you know, mid-season last year, end of last year, and then Kane didn't play, obviously, this year. And I think that had a lot to do with it. So I don't know. Am I completely out of it, Megan? Tell me, you know, you're more plugged in with the team.
I think you're on the head there, but I think even Perez, as we were saying, I think he was kind of one of those morale guys. And even I feel like the only guy who we really had that was like someone who's gonna, you know, cheer everyone up or whatever it needs to be in the dugout is really Arcio was really the only other guy who we had on the team at all this year, thinking about it. I mean, no one stood out to me as someone who like gave the team like an identity or a character. That's kind of like how I felt about the entire season, was we didn't really have a set identity or like anything to rally around. It was just kind of like, I don't know, I already said hodgepodge, but that's the word that keeps coming to me, is like, we really didn't mesh at all. That's how I felt anyway.
Yeah.
And by the way, anybody who wants to say Arcia needs to go anymore, I will fight them.
Yeah. Well, get back to kind of the point. I think the big, if we're going to call them glue guys on this team, is Eddie Cedar. But anyhow, back to kind of
serious note though, John, even the manager is a glue guy. I mean, Council is a glue guy. He is the identity of this team. He really is. But, you know, you need those players to extend your personality onto the field.
Okay.
Council can go out there on the field and play for him.
That's a Council body double that's actually the same age as you, Megan. I'm convinced of it, because that dude still looks like he's 24 years old, man. I don't understand it.
I'll say the other thing, in terms of other, you know, you mentioned the loss during the year of having, you know, once there was a COVID test somewhere in the league, we had Lo Kane step out. One of the other losses I thought really did hurt too was having the Pineapple not on the team. I mean, Manny played, I think it's just 15 games. He played in 15 games, it says, before he was done. He's batting .231. You know, he was doing pretty well, and he's a fun guy, and also he's good with the I mean, he's the main catcher for the most part. Like all the players.
This happens about three times a show, Megan.
I'm just taking over. I don't know.
He'll come back around.
No, no, but I mean, wait. Just
he's talking anyways.
Yeah, but I can hear you. Come on. No, I'm saying Manny Pena, though, is like one of those other guys who we lost partway through the year. We get 15 games out of Pena before he was lost for the season. And as a catcher, especially the guy who has been the catcher for the guys who were already on this team. I mean, he knows Burns. He's known Burns for a couple of years now. He knows Woodruff. He knows, you know, these guys. Losing your catcher, I mean, and Omar obviously being what he was and bringing Nottingham up and all that, they don't have the same kind of camaraderie with the pitching, even though the pitching was just about the only thing that saved the Brewers this year, it seemed. That, I think, also goes along with that in terms of just the chemistry of the team moving through this year and how that went. I want to get back, though, to the first question I had and getting into that. I guess it's the second question I posed, but I didn't actually ask anyone to answer it yet. Among those other people, I'm taking Jerko off of there. Who then on that this group of, and we're not counting Urias because he was a trade, just of the free agents here, who's the one that you were that you felt, you know, best about bringing back into the team?
And well, why? If you can count Vogelbach. If that? You can count him, Vogelbach.
Vogelbach.
I would say that
he is fun.
Just stuff what he did in the last how long was he here? What 15 games, 20 games, maybe maximum.
Yeah, not much.
He was not there for very long, so just to see what he could do in that sort of time period and him turn it around, I guess. We have team control over him for like the next 4 or 5 years, something like that. So
played 19 games. He batted .328 over that span and has an OPS of .987.
Yeah. He was literally him and Jerko were like our best two hitters all season. So yeah. I would say I guess those two are the two that I would be happy to come back. The others really, I mean, obviously Holt and Smoke are gone already. And
yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't really be ecstatic to see any of the others come back. I mean, Garcia, okay. I mean, I guess he can be a decent fielder, but I didn't see anything super exciting out of him either. Just personally, I don't know.
I liked Avisail Garcia, but mostly in the idea that he was going to be Lokane's backup. And I liked that about him. I mean, he gave us 53 games this year. That 238, not particularly great. He had 10 doubles. He was able to do some things when he was up there. He wasn't amazing, but he was a steady player, and he was a good fielder for the most part. I mean, he's a step down from Lokane in that regard, but he was a pretty good fielder, and I thought highly of him. Vogelbach, just on the fact that he looks like Strong Mad alone is, you know, that's a good boost. If anybody,
he looks like the Barrel Man. I mean, that's
got the wrong nose. But yeah, I get it.
Well, wrong nose. I mean, that's fixable. I mean, rhinoplasty has come a long ways in the last 30 years, John. We can fix that. We can turn him into the Barrel Man. He can even wear a different uniform if it's illegal by league standards. But yeah,
if God anthropomorphized a square, it would be Vogelbach.
Well, I bring Vogelbach and I'll belly up to this one too. Vogelbach and Sogard, I would bring back as long as Sogard's used properly and Vogelbach is as well. I mean, just like we're talking about glue guys, you know, the character guys that are on your team. Like every team needs characters too, and like, I mean, we've got Brent Suter, granted, but I mean, beyond that, the position players. I mean, as long as Sogard does what he does right and. You know, Vogelbach, I'm all for bringing him back, I think, if he can keep up what he did at the end of the year, like Megan said. But, I mean, as long as they're put in the proper roles and not being starters, you know, I think Vogelbach plays outfield and third base as well. And then Sogard can pretty much play anywhere on the field, I'm pretty sure. So
I want to see Vogelbach run out full sprint for a line drive.
If Miguel Sano can play right field and third base, Vogelbach can play right field and third base. That's all I'm saying.
Just worried he'll look like Schwarber. You know, just, no.
Like but either way, I mean,
giant
it's just,
Muppet.
That's my two votes out of the people to bring back. And I've got a place in my, even though I've bashed Sogard a little bit during all this, you know, just saying he's an average at best player. Now below average at best player, average fielder, above average fielder. I like Sogard. I really do. I think, and it's like I said, his character guy. He's someone that Brewers fans can rally around. And this team always, because of the small payroll, always has to have someone like that. You know, you got to have your fan favorites. Yeah. You know, we've got our MVP. We've got our pitcher. Finally. We've got a reliever. And I swear to God, if they trade Hader, I'm going to leave this team forever.
Don't do that. Well, I think that was one of the shining spots this year, Megan, right? Just the pitching, and that we had Williams and Hader there, and then having essentially two aces on the staff really picked up this team.
Yeah, I think going back to Vogelbach for just a second is
go right ahead.
I think his spot on the team is if they continue the universal DH, I think that is his way in. But
great point. That's actually a big thing too, because GMs need to know about if that's going to be a real thing or not, because all these NL GMs have to make what they're going to do. So great point, by the way. Thank you.
So I think going back to the pitching though, I think every Brewers fan would agree on this. This is another easy take, is the pitching was the best. I mean, come on, the bullpen, two reliever of the year candidates in Hader and Williams. Rookie of the year candidate and Williams also. I mean, he really came out of nowhere. I mean, was anyone expecting that out of him coming into the season?
No, I didn't.
What do they call his slider or his changeup? What do they call that thing?
Good.
Well, yeah. I saw a weird nickname for it the other day, and it was perfect. I know he's a pitching ninja, but yeah, that guy is ridiculous.
Well, and Megan, I mean, just like how happy as a Brewers fan to see Corbin Burnes come back from kind of how last year started off to what he had this year, Megan. Just that whole the feels from that and the joy for a person like that who works so hard.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you love to see it because obviously we all know he was struggling last year. He kind of had like the yips situation or something. He just couldn't get it together. And I guess he worked on it, and then he had that extended off season, obviously, with COVID and everything. So seeing him come back and kind of put it all together, that gives me hope for the future, honestly. More than anything, I think this year was kind of testing the waters, seeing what we can do, what we can improve upon, and where we need to go for the upcoming few years, which I think is the window is going to be opening soon, like the real window again. Mm. And, the Woodruff and Burnes combination 1-2 out of the rotation, who can beat that? 1-2 in a row. I mean, that's good.
Yeah, that's Dodgers level. I'm massively intrigued by what you just said about the window. Please tell me more about this. How you feel the Brewers are about to come into a new window already?
I think I think it's going to be in 2023 is going to be our best time to compete, in my opinion. So going like behind the scenes on this take, I guess, is I think Mitchell is going to be our starting center fielder after Kane leaves.
Okay.
We're going to have Yelich obviously out there. And then if Urias and Hira can continue to improve, I mean, I think Hira took a step back this season. We all saw that coming. I think sophomore recession is kind of how they describe it. But if Hira can go back onto the path he was on last year, he's going to be in his prime. Yelich is going to be nearing the end of his prime. And then we'll have Burnes and Woodruff and hopefully a few other good pitchers. Ethan Small is one of the ones I'm excited about. Williams obviously will still be here. So I think just in like, I guess, 2021, so it's three seasons now. I think that'll be our best shot.
Excellent. I love to hear that because, I mean, like the way we keep talking about this with Brewers and Twins and Royals and all those teams, like, I mean, you are just trying to get from window to window, whereas the Yankees can keep just buying it and the Dodgers can keep buying it and the Cubs too, even though they don't. They could just buy their window every year. You have to have a real plan to keep getting a team that can do something. So that's always good to see. And yeah, I'm glad you're excited. That makes me excited because I totally dialed in.
And I like her point too, in the fact, and we've talked about this on this podcast too, John, is that I don't think this season was supposed to be a real hot season anyways for the Brewers. And, you know, granted, if it wouldn't have been a shortened season, you know, who knows what the long-term results would have been. But I mean, a playoff berth with a sub 500 record, and
home boat.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, and two, arguably our best pitcher in Williams and our second best starter were both out. You know, could we have beaten the Dodgers? Yes. We would have had to beat them 1-0 and 1-0. That's how it would have, that, and everyone knew it. And that's the thing, is that if you run out those same pitchers, could we have gotten through the NLDS? Probably not, not in a longer series, but you know, it was such a back-to-back blow when we knew Burns wasn't going to be there. And when we knew, then when that last second scratch of Williams on the roster, it was like, well, you know, what the, cause you knew that Woodruff and Burns could have gotten him to the sixth, and then,
I mean, throwing it to the bullpen, our bullpen can be shut down when they needed to be this season. I think that was a given at any time.
Stearns has done such a good job keeping that bullpen just stocked with hot arms. Like, even with Jeffress, you know, some would say that he had a little bit of a comeback this year with the Cubs. He was, he couldn't be on the Brewers anymore. He was done. We were talking about the yips earlier. He had the yips. Pitchers are different than hitters. He had to go, you know, and pitchers can find themselves out. You know, batters can too, but pitchers for the most part, you know, once you're down that rabbit hole or down that spiral, especially as a reliever, it's hard to get back out. Knebel has been broken for the better part of 2.5 years now. I mean, but yet Stearns keeps pouring money and arms into that bullpen, and that bullpen is, it's been the strength of the Brewers for four or five years now. I mean, it's, and now having two starters on the front end, like you said, there's that, what was the kid's name that's coming up?
Ethan Small. He was our number one pick in 2019.
Thank you. Yep. And so, I mean, it's you're right. The Brewers are coming into a new window. Yelich might be coming out of his prime, but he'll still be plenty good at that point.
Absolutely. I think he can contribute for the entirety of his contract. I think he'll just be in his, I guess, MVP years, if you want to call him that, in the next few years, I would say.
Right. Okay. And yeah, I think this is one of those blips on the radar where it was, the team was a little bit better than, because I really thought the team was going to be bad this year in the spring. Like, not bad, but like not, you know, competing in any way, shape, or form. So, but it was almost like that year last year with the Packers, when the Packers went 13-3 in LaFleur's first year. And you're just kind of like, everyone's like, yeah, well, they got routed in the NFC Championship game. We were like, we all thought the Packers going to be 4-12 this year. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, it's almost like that with the Brewers too. And it was a little bit of a whimper at the end once they got into the playoffs, but it was, there's definitely things to look forward to on this team. Well, did that answer your question, John?
I think so. What was I talking about?
I have no idea what you were talking about, but me and Megan had a nice tangent there. That was good. Great.
The longer I can get out of the way and let Megan talk too, the more we will all understand about the Brewers. Yeah. So the other thing, Megan, you brought this up, and this was kind of one thing I was wondering a little bit about myself. We definitely had down years from several players. I mean, Yelich did not play particularly well this year. I mean, nowhere near his standards. Braun, I mean, he's injured a lot anyhow, didn't have a great year. Hero, like you said, was down as well. I guess the thing I'm getting at is, like you said this earlier too, the longer term season. Do you think that had we had a 162 game season, some of this would have played out differently? We've kind of explored this on this show before. The idea I had is that basically, if it was a 162 game season, the pressure to get out of your slump is less, and Yelich probably would have worked himself through it and been out and then back to a better thing at some point. And that's been my kind of feeling on this. I want to get your thoughts on this and what you think about, you know, because you mentioned if there'd been a longer term season, there would have been something different. So I kind of want you to talk more about that idea. And am I crazy? you know, no, on this point, at least, am I crazy?
You can kind of tell the difference between the playoff teams and the, I guess, expansion playoff teams. You could tell the mentality is just different, in my opinion. So going back to your original question of, like, if this was a real season, I guess, a 162 games, I think you give guys, like, Smoke longer to get out of that slump. I mean, you're not going to cut him after, what, 40-some games in a normal season. I mean, that would just be kind of crazy. I would venture to say that'd be kind of crazy to cut a guy after 40 games in a 162-game season. But
Yeah. Just
giving the guys the opportunity to come out of that slump, or I guess the overall slump. I mean, really, who was our best hitter was Jerko. So was he really even that amazing? Not really. I mean, no one was really like having an amazing season where you'd be like, yes, he would have contributed all 162 games if this were a 162 game season. So I feel like giving them the opportunity to get out of those slumps and go on like the runs, the streaks of a real baseball season it would have contributed to a better atmosphere in the clubhouse, which I think would have turned into a different way of winning games, a different way of not having to rely on the bullpen for everything.
Okay.
For literally every win. I mean, what we had to rely on the bullpen for every win, except for that one game where we scored like 19 runs. I mean,
they don't spread them out. They needed to spread out the runs more.
And I admittedly don't pay attention to baseball nearly as much as I did when I was younger. And I don't get into the baseball intensive podcasts and shows that I used to, but when you were just talking there, I just thought of something, and you were talking about how a season pans out and how things happen during a season. And one thing that happens during the midseason a lot that helps out a lot of veterans, you know, that are either having like a slump or something's going on, they're figuring something out, is they have that big expand their roster during the midseason. They bring up all the kids from the minors to let them play for a little bit in the majors. And your Yelich just get to just come in and pinch hit or play a couple innings in the outfield, and they're trying to work through things. And like John, that was John's thesis or hypothesis, was that, you know, a lot of these, when Yelich was, it was obvious that he was trying to hit with his arms, and Yelich has a full body swing. He's got a Ken Griffey Jr. swing, and that's not hyperbole. They're both great players. They both have full body swings. Yelich was obviously trying to push things with his arms and stuff like that. And you wonder how much it would have helped to have that, 40 games during the midsummer where they bring up all the minor leaguers and it's expanded roster, you know, this 40-man roster. Sorry, I'm an idiot. But that just those kind of things, like that didn't exist. There was no downtime. It was 100% for 60 games, which is fun, but the things that we're used to seeing in a baseball season didn't happen, just natural progression of things. Plus, how many of those rookies that didn't get a chance, or those that one surprise minor leaguer that comes up during that expanded roster, didn't happen this year either? You know, it's going to be interesting to see next year all the players that didn't get diamond time this year.
That is one thing I'm worried about, is did progression just stop for a whole year? I mean, that's concerning when you have a minor league system that's as weak as ours is. That is concerning to see that. I mean, they were playing against each other in Appleton, yeah, but how competitive can those games really be when you're just playing inter-squad every day with no fans? Like, I guess you're staying loose, but like, how are you really improving that way?
It might actually help the Brewers, because it might have made all the really good minor league systems regress.
I guess that's true.
Bring them back to us.
Let's do some glass half full stuff here.
You know? Reel them back in. Reel them in. Yeah. Bring them back to us. Jeez. Okay.
It's just, come on. It's a good point.
Now, and this is the part where if we had Megan, or pardon, not Megan, if we had Wendy with us at this point, we'd be passing out the tissues, I think. But Megan, what happens with Ryan Braun this offseason?
Oh, I'm not afraid to say it. I think he's gone. I think it's time. I've come to terms with it already. you know, he's been on the team since I can remember. I mean, I started watching in 08 when I was literally 6 years old, 7 years old, and he was there. You know, I've obviously, we all have an emotional connection to Ryan Braun in some way. I mean, we're all, no one's afraid to admit that. But I personally think he's gone. I think going off the stuff that his wife has posted on Instagram and such, she's always saying things like, thank you, Milwaukee, stuff like that. So yeah. I think he's done. And it might be for the best with the injuries that he sustained over the last, like, 2-3 years. He's just not producing the same as back in his prime.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. Go ahead, Aaron. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and there hasn't been a person like that for a long time for any of us. I mean, me and John are essentially the same age. He is older, though. I want to point that out.
By 2 weeks.
But I mean, so when did Robin retire?
Oh, I'm forgetting what year it was.
95, 96?
Somewhere in that.
It was during the dark years. I know that. And then Molitor left early 90s and went to the World Series with the Blue Jays.
The Blue Jays, then the Twins, yeah.
And then the Twins. Well, he didn't win World Series with the Twins because
you're right. I was just saying he won World Series with the Blue Jays, then he went to the Twins.
And all of us kind of jumped on the bat, even though we hated Toronto because Toronto was kind of the team that beat the Brewers out of their only real shot in 92, I want to say. You know, but we were 13, 14 years old when that happened, and they were always there, you know. But, I mean, like you said, you know, he's been here since you were 6. You know, that's the majority of your, you know, formative baseball years. It's like that. Those were my years, was in my teen years watching that, because it's when you have time to do that and when you have time to listen to Euchre. You know, and going to a baseball stadium is the best thing on earth. And you're going to go to Milwaukee County Stadium, and
go to Milwaukee County. Yeah, I mean, like this is I always picked every year to have number 19 for every baseball team I grew up playing for. I would, you know, rush to the front of the line for 19.
Yeah, I was number 4. I loved Paul Molitor. I played third base. That was my bit. You know.
Yeah, I always try to make my outfielding stance exactly like Robbins because I loved watching him play.
I tried to be on the injured reserve as much as I could because I liked Paul Molitor that much.
And Jim Gantner and all those guys.
He got 3,000 hits. He did it. He's fine.
But yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, then there were those rough years where it was like trying to get excited for Jody Reed and, you know, and Jeff Jenkins and stuff like that. But yeah.
Jesse Sexton is up to bat.
Yes. But I mean, here's my thing with Braun.
What? Yeah, that would have been the beginning of your watching your. No, wait. You see, first started in 08. Yeah, that was you already in the Hardy years. Never mind.
Yeah,
you're in the Prince Fielder Hardy years. That's awesome. Yeah.
Jeff Jenkins had a swing that hurt your back watching it. It was terrible. But
okay, it was odd enough watching Randy Johnson pitch at 6'10". Watching someone bat at 6'10" that has to guard a 5-foot-tall strike zone.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. But here's going to my thoughts on Braun. I mean, like, I think Megan's right. I think this is the end of his Brewers stay. I'm much more mixed in my feelings on it because, I mean, like, I love the signing when we gave Braun the big long-term contract because I think that at that point it was like you had to pick Braun or Prince to be the guy you were going to have for the longer period of time. And obviously Prince was mad that they didn't pick him. And that's why they couldn't get him later is they went and got Braun first. But there is something about the steroids thing that still does bother me. And the follow-up to the way he handled that. And I mean, like, it obviously hurt Aaron Rodgers because they don't talk anymore. And they were pretty close for a while and business partners and everything. But I still rooted for Ryan. I was never against him. I was never going against him because, you know, he's on my team and I'm supporting him. But I was never quite as much on his side after that. I was not going to do the, like, giving him a bigger standing ovation than the other guys on that team because it did bug me. And that did hurt me to a certain extent. I'm not like saying I want him to go. But I think Megan's right. In terms of what he produces at this point, it's probably time to go. And I'm not as broken up as a lot of people because first off, he's not the beginning of my fanhood, which I think is different. Obviously, you know, Megan having him, you know, towards the beginning of when you were really getting into things, and he's the first giant name you had. But he's a difficult player. He doesn't necessarily make it easy to love him, but he has so many of those great moments. The home runs that you remember having watched that moment, the big games that he had in several playoff situations, big games against the Dodgers, games against the Diamondbacks and stuff like that. And you're just like, you're going to remember how that felt. It's an odd thing to watch change and leave, but he's been kind of gone already. He was not a factor on this team necessarily this year. What that kind of leads me into next, and this is the last thing we're going to talk about with the Brewers. We're getting close to time at some point. We want to talk about a couple other things, but
I don't get to eulogy Braun. Come on.
I thought you did. You were already talking for a while there. Were you not talking about Braun?
Oh no, I was just going to say that
I turn it off. I stop listening.
The only thing with Braun is to piggyback off yours is that you are 100% correct. Is that a lot of people are having a hard time letting it go because there's a big gap between our generation and the last generation. That's why I was talking about Yount, because there was nobody in between Yount and Braun really that was like that super high end player. I mean, Prince was a pretty high-end player, but Braun was a legit MVP. And Braun is one of three MVPs the Brewers have ever had. You know, twice.
Well, not legit. Not really.
What's that?
I said not really legit. I mean.
Oh. Well, not. I'm just saying that. But he's top end talent. He at least deserved to be in the MVP candidate race. So that's what I'm saying. It, like, yeah, no, whether or not you want to argue semantics or not. But I'm just saying he was like talent that was worthy of being up there for MVP consideration. And he's one of three we've ever had, Yount being twice, him once, and Yelich once. Otherwise, we haven't had MVPs on these teams. Do we even have a Cy Young winner? I think Raleigh got it once, right?
Yes, and he was an MVP, wasn't he?
No, Raleigh got the Cy Young once. Okay. Anyways, either way, so I'm like, we don't have a whole lot of top-end players on this team. I was at the game against the Florida Marlins in 2011 when he hit the home run to clinch the Central, and it was an amazing – and just the way he tortured the Cubs and everything else, he was a huge fan favorite. I didn't like how it went down with the steroids, but not that he was doing steroids, because a lot of people were. It was how he went scorched earth on everybody and took everybody else out and, like John said, made enemies with Aaron Rodgers. Because those two were a pretty dynamic duo of MVP candidate or MVPs that we had going for a while there. Braun's a top five for Brewers players. You know, he really is in a market that's starved baseball wise for just high end talent. Ryan Braun kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we all knew he was who he was when he was drafted, but it was still kind of shocking that the Brewers had an MVP, you know, and he helped bring the Brewers back to relevance. And now the Brewers have not been able to pull home a World Series. We've got is one NLCS appearance since the Braun, I call it the Braun Hardy, Prince Fielder era, right? The CC Sabathia year, right?
Ricky
that was when the Brewers came back into relevance as a team, because for 20 years they weren't relevant, or for 15 years they weren't relevant, from the early 90s until the late aughts. So
are you telling me Jaha wasn't a legend?
Johnny Jaha was a legend in my mind, as was Greg Vaughn.
And Jeff Cirillo?
Cal Eldred.
Cal Eldred, excellent.
Now, Cal Eldred would be early 90s, but anyway. So,
and then
no, Braun was the first big talent that we had who wasn't some sort of just retread that ended up on the Brewers. He wasn't like the movie Major League, you know, where the Cleveland Indians are calling, at least if you're going to call me, at least say you're from the Yankees, you know, one of those deals, you know. He was the first one, and him and Prince and JJ Hardy really brought hope back into this town. And it shows, because the attendance was better. Like Miller Park was after its initial, you know, building, and it was, ooh, is this bringing a thing? The attendance was terrible for years at Miller Park. I mean, just like, cause there's nothing to go watch. The teams were losing 100 games a year, And he kind of ushered in that new era where the Brewers are up there with attendance every year, no matter what, because there's always something worth watching. So that's what I think about Ryan Braun and Boone.
All right. The last thing I want to get to is just quickly, what are the things that we most need to improve on this team going into next year, Megan? You've already talked about some of the players you're excited for, you know, Mitchell and Small and all of them. What is the thing that the Brewers need to address next year to be one of those teams that at least has kind of a better shot to be somewhere involved in the conversation?
I'm again going to go with, I guess what the community consensus is the hitting coach of Andy Haynes has been under high criticism, I think, and deservedly so. Not that I think he should be fired, which I've come under heat for saying, you know, I said, well, people said he should be fired, and now I'm saying, no, I don't think he should be fired, but I think he should be under pressure. Okay. I think the pressure is on him now because we saw Yelich struggle. We saw Hira not really perform to what we were expecting. We saw a whole bunch of players. I mean, we got no hit by a scrub, really. I mean, call it what it is. We got no hit by a scrub, pretty much, on the Cubs.
Yeah.
So I think if we can take that into the offseason, figure out what is up with everyone's swings. I mean, again, not really a huge offensive production year in 2020. The offense was stagnant for the majority of the year. So I think if we can hone in on some of those things that are making our hitters not perform in the way they have, obviously Yelich went through an injury. So how much can we blame the injury for, you know, this? But I think the hitting is going to be the biggest focus this offseason, and I hope that they can get it turned around and we can see an offense worth watching.
All right. Excellent. Well, that's going to wrap up what we call every year we do this. It's our requiem for a Brewers season. And that's what we're saying, you know, sweet dreams, sweet prince, flights of angels, sing thee to thy rest. And we'll see the Brewers again next year. And hopefully see something different here. And we'll see when we get started with that again.
Adios, so, los cerveceros.
Cerveceros. The Pivo Varzi, the Polish one for Polish Day. I have that shirt. Next thing,
hey, help me out just before I came down here. Sayonara, that's Japanese, right?
I think so.
Okay. Ruby asked me as I was walking down the stairs, and it's been bugging me for over an hour now. Sorry.
It's entirely possible I'm wrong, but I think so.
I suppose I could look it up, but I don't know how to spell it.
Cool.
That's what Siri is for.
Have Ruby do it for you.
Right.
We'll get into our Packers talk here then, and we're just going to kind of wrap through the last bit here. The Packers come up, they're going to be playing Tampa Bay. Aaron's going to call him Tampa Bay, I'm sure. But, I mean, that's the biggest
thing. I listen to K-Fan, I call him Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay.
Oh, okay. My biggest thought here is that the biggest thing that's going to be the interesting aspect in this entire game is how does the Packers offense do against the Tampa Bay defense, because that's going to be the biggest thing. Is Tampa Bay's defense that's a legitimate defense. They've got good linebackers, they have a good defensive line, they have a lot of speed everywhere. Okay, they've been playing very well against a lot of teams. The offense is what garners the attention, obviously, because it has Tom Brady and a bunch of other geriatrics that they've put together. But I don't know on that. The one thing that does possibly concern me in this game is that while they have a lot of old running backs that other teams didn't want, they do have a lot of them. And while, you know, like Jones and whatever who they just pick up, they have LeSean McCoy and they also have Fournette. They may not be doing a ton, but if they just keep hammering Fournette at you, if he's healthy enough to play this week, that could be enough to at least kind of slow down the game enough and keep our defense on the field. I think that their defense, and we'll see. I mean, because the other thing that's the wild card in this one, Aaron, to me, is Bruce Arians wants to throw the ball like crazy, which is why it made no sense for Tampa Bay of all teams to sign Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. He can't stretch the field, and it's the one thing Bruce Arians wants to do more than anything is stretch the field. You know, the whole no risk it, no biscuit, if you've read his book. I mean, he's had Roethlisberger, and he's had Carson, and he's, you know, he's all these guys
big,
who could throw
big arms in their primes. Yeah.
And Brady just isn't that anymore. So I think it's going to be a lower scoring game in this regard, because I think that the Packers are still going to find ways to scheme open people, because they've been able to scheme some open things even when they haven't been able to just force things the way they want to. And I think the two other things that are going to be leaning on me towards, you know, picking a Packer victory here, which I'm going to do in a second, is I think Kenny Clark's back, and that changes their running game on our defensive side. And I think Devontae Adams is back, because they both said they were ready last week, but the team was holding him back, and then they had a bye week. I think the Packers are going to win this, but I think it's going to be like 21-24, or 28-24, pardon me. 28-24 Packers win. Aaron, do you have a call? Megan, did you want to weigh in on this at all? I don't know if you had anything else to add for Packers talk.
Who, me?
Either one or of Megan. You.
Oh, I do have plenty to weigh in on about Packers talk. I was just looking in the background here. I see that Kamal Martin is practicing again here. Is he actually going to, is he going to be playing or not? I see St. Brown is also
practicing again. They've been designated to return from IR. They have to be brought back to the team within 3 weeks.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean they'll be playing this week, but they're at least practicing. I saw EQ catching the ball. Equinemius, Tristan, Imhotep, St. Brown.
The third.
No.
Version 3.0.
His dad's name is John.
Yes, I know, right? Love it. So, no, I was just wondering, not that that has a big impact on it. I was just, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up with this, the Packers bit, was that I saw that those two came back, and I was going to ask you about that because you're a little bit more plugged in than I've been lately here. So the thing about Tampa Bay is that, so I thought Tampa was starting to pull it around when Tom Brady had that 5-touchdown game 2 weeks ago, but I didn't see that game. I don't watch Tampa Bay football games. I watch Tampa Bay football highlights, or lowlights when they happen. And like you said, I for one thought that they should have had Jameis Winston have LASIK and then kept going forward with it, because that guy is super talented. I did, however, see Tampa play against the Bears. Now, while the Packers and Bears haven't played this year, so I can't really get a real good vibe as to what's going on. All I do know is that the Bears won in an exceptionally ugly fashion. This is a team that does. I still don't know how the Bears are 4-1, but I mean, Nick Foles did not play real hot down the stretch. He kind of, you know, I get it. He's the Tom Brady killer. That was a rough game to watch all around on all aspects of everything. And Tom having a geriatric moment, forgetting that it wasn't fourth down, or it was fourth down, or we don't know what's going on here. And it's like,
in the moment at this point, he's so old.
He may not have known what quarter it was.
I mean, what year were you, Megan, fourth quarter. What year were you born? I could probably do the math. So 2002?
2001.
So Tom started.
That was the year of the Tuck Rule.
Yeah, the Tuck Rule. That's right. Okay, I was in Nicaragua when that happened. Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. So, all right. Anyway, so, yeah, he's been starting longer than Megan's been alive. So, you know. There's a lot of CTE that can happen. No, John will tell you this too. Like, I'm a bigger Tom Brady Bobo than most. Like, I'm one that wants to say, yes, call him the greatest of all time, because it's a results driven league. It always is. Coaches get hired and fired. GMs get hired and fired. Look what happened down in Atlanta this week because of the debacle they got going down there. I mean, Dan Quinn's a heck of a coach. You know, he's gotten to Atlanta a lot of places that they haven't been, except for winning a Super Bowl, which they should have, and he should have been fired directly after that Super Bowl. But anyways, it's a results oriented league. It is for everybody. You know, like very few quarterbacks get paid a whole bunch of money to be the quarterback of a losing team. You know, and so there's positions that aren't directly related to wins or losses, and you can make it to the Hall of Fame. Hence Joe Thomas of the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns were the worst football team in history while he was their left tackle. He might have been the best left tackle in history while playing for a terrible team. That's fine. Yeah. you can't be a head coach, you can't be a GM, and you can't be a quarterback of a terrible team and be considered one of the greatest of all time. Tom Brady is one of the greatest of all time. I don't know how I got off on this tangent, but otherwise, the Packers are going to win this one. It's going to be pretty handy. We're going to go with a 33-19 score, John.
All right. Megan, did you want to? You don't have to give us a score if you don't want to, but.
Well, I didn't come in prepared with a score, but I do think, I mean, based off what I saw in the Monday night game against Chicago when Tampa Bay was playing Chicago, I mean, that neither team impressed me really. I mean, it was a it was not a great game to watch, first of all, and also going off on the Bears tangent is I don't think that they're a legitimate team. I think they got lucky in the first three games going 3-0. I think they got really lucky. So seeing Tampa Bay struggle that much against a team that I don't really think is that good, personally, I don't think the Bears are contenders with their quarterback situation.
Yeah.
So seeing Tampa Bay struggle that much against a team, and obviously they lost, so I don't know. I don't think Tampa Bay is going to put up as strong of a front as maybe. I don't really listen to a lot of Packers radio or Packers beat writers or anything like that. I know they have a huge standing here in Wisconsin and nationally, but I don't think that I was about to say the Rays because they're playing tonight, but I don't think the Buccaneers are. I don't think they're going to give us that much of a challenge. I mean, seeing how the Packers have played this season, I think we could put up another 35-point game on this team.
I think the other thing that happens here, though, that does help is Tampa has the good up front, but I think we defeat that schematically by Rodgers getting the ball out of his hand faster than he's been getting it out of his hand for the last decade, basically, at this point. The ball is moving out of his hand, which gets the ball to playmakers 5 yards of play. I mean, just keep moving down the field, and then every now and then take a shot. So much of this is just how well LaFleur has been able to scheme this team open and scheme points to the board. So, yeah, I think that those are important things that are going to be big keys in this game.
I'm dead serious, John. They should line up Williams opposite Davante Adams at wide receiver. They should just do it. I mean, it's with the lack of weapons on the outside, you know, it's from the wide receiver position, but how they overcome it with the running backs. And Dylan has proven himself okay.
They had three running backs in the field a couple times last week. It was fantastic. No,
we talked about this. I'm just saying start from the beginning of the game with Williams. Like, teach him the basics of being a wide receiver because he can obviously catch. He can obviously run the route trees. You see that. Like, he's got the ability to do it. Just roll him out there and just start him at right split end and just go with it, like, for the heck of it. Because if anything, it's going to make those defenses – think. I mean, what's MVS, you know, is better in the slot anyways, so have MVS stay in the slot. Don't put him as the opposite receiver. And, you know, losing Lazard stinks, you know, but
Lazard and EQ come back soon. We'll see.
We've got three really good running backs, two of whom are on the last year of their contract. One of them's not coming back. Let's use these guys while they're still here. And Cooks.
What?
The Vikings.
Oh, Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook, excuse me. Showed us last night why you don't put $12 million into a running back.
Exactly,
Longer than his third year. So.
Right. All right, so we've got our Packer talk in. We'll obviously start with Packers again next week once we get back to that, but we had to do our Brewers talk to finish up their season on our end and bookend it. But then the other two things I'm going to talk about just briefly, just to throw them out there. Badger season opener has now been set for a time. They will play Illinois, ILLINI, on Friday, October 23rd at 7 p.m. And they're still not going to be having, you know, that would normally be a very raucous student section because they still start drinking at the same time. But there will not be people there. Men's basketball got their Big Ten championship rings today, and basically every one of them is like, they're all coming back. This whole team is coming back next year. They didn't graduate any of the starters, so they're all very excited, and they're all looking forward. I mean, they're everywhere on Twitter today, looking forward to how this next season's going to get started, because it looks like they've got a plan to just get going with basketball at some point, and they're hoping they'll be ready to play that. All right, well, that wraps up another wonderful show for us. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We especially want to thank Megan for coming here and teaching us about baseball again. It's always wonderful to have you on with us.
Yeah, no. Next preseason, we just leave me out. Like, just I'd rather have Megan talk about baseball. Like, actually, I want to be here because I like her takes on stuff, and I like talking with her about baseball because she's, like I said, she's in the prime of her baseball watching ability.
It's true. I don't have much going on here at college.
That was my feeling of college too, and even more errands. Everybody, make sure you go follow Megan though. Brew Crew Megan on Twitter. She's fantastic. She's going to give you a lot of good insight. She's definitely giving you something about every game, it seems. So make sure you go and follow her. And now in the off season, you'll get good movie reviews and some Star Wars talk every now and then too. So,
and of course, Packers content. Can't absolutely leave it. Just not as much of a Packers branded account as others.
Right. Are. Yes, indeed. Of course, you can also, of course, follow me at Not So Humble Host. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk, and you can follow the show at Scotty Johnny Pod. And of course, remember that wherever you follow us, please subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
I am also not a Pack branded account. I am a Cheddar branded account.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.